Welcome back. I'm Juliette Talevi. You're watching Stockwatch, and joining me this Monday evening are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Ashraf Mohammed from Arqaam Capital. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS stock in the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gary, Ashraf, nice to see you both this evening. Not a great start for the week, down 1% on the all-shares industrial index, getting it in the neck. Must pass under pressure. Gary, what's going on? Because from that incredible rally we saw from the start of the year to, what was it, 23rd of April, when we were up almost 13%, we've now handed back just over, well, about half of those gains.
It comes down to the US-Chinese tensions and the trade war. That's, I think, really what's got investors spooked. So up until the rally that we saw was, you know, it was an international rally. This wasn't a South Africa-specific rally. And as international markets moved higher, so did we. And it just looked like the market wasn't pricing in any sort of negative resolution from the US-Chinese trade talks. And as soon as we started to get the jitters, we've seen like an aggressive repricing of risk assets around the world, and that's helped to bring our markets lower. You know, as we ended last week, we kind of had, a little bit of positivity around, trade, at least regulation around the EU and Japan. And with the banning of Huawei today, that really just sent everyone into a tailspin.
Yeah, I mean, these are all sort of almost ancillary aspects to a trade standoff. Or is this a totally separate issue? And Huawei being blacklisted, the big news was Google essentially saying that they can't use most of their services. Huawei can't use most of Google's services.
Correct. I think that it's another way of attacking the Chinese. We know that the Chinese economy is controlled, so Huawei has very close ties with the ruling party, and therefore they're not going to attack the Chinese directly, rather attack one of their corporate champions. And by blacklisting Huawei, that's certainly one way of doing it. Not forgetting the CFO is still under house arrest in Canada. Mm. And there's every chance of an extradition happening over a period of time. So I think tensions are going to continue rising rather than things getting resolved in the next few weeks.
And the spillover, as you said, emerging markets, so risk assets, something like Naspers, is that the decline that we saw in Naspers' share price today, was that directly related, would you say, to this, or were there other factors there?
I'd say there were definitely other factors. We saw at the end of last week, Baidu, which is the competitor to Tencent and Alibaba in China, reporting its first quarterly loss since listing. And that's just indicative of how the Chinese market is right now. So Baidu is starting to suffer from losses because the economy slowed down. We saw that in terms of retail sales out of China last week. And investors have started becoming concerned about what is the profitability and the growth prospects for a company like Naspers in China.
Okay.
But I think
But I think it's always difficult to also, and pull it apart exactly. And I think certainly, I mean, announcements like this are going to impact anything that's listed in Hong Kong as well, especially technology-driven companies. You look at Huawei. Huawei does 19% of global smartphones. I mean, it's absolutely enormous.
Hasn't it overtaken Apple as the
leading supplier of handsets?
Yeah.
So you look at that. If this is taken through to, it's the logical conclusion, this could potentially mean that essentially all sales of Huawei devices outside of China will stop, because the Google operating system the open source operating system that they're going to be allowed to use just won't cut it. We've seen Alibaba trying to launch an operating system, I think it's now called AliOS. Samsung's tried with Tizen as well. They just haven't gained the traction that Android operating system has. So if this ban goes through, at least if this is followed through to the end, this is going to rewrite the entire pattern of trade globally. It's very, very significant. So I don't know.
I look
at that and I see Naspers down, and I think that is got to be part of the reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's quite interesting because trade wars are all quite abstract until something like this happens, and this sort of crystallizes a standoff between two nations.
Are you going to be able to update your P30? Will you be able to update your P30?
That you paid 21,000 Rand for 2 months ago.
A bit later than everyone else, and it's a mess. It's a complete mess.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're getting it in the neck. But there are also other factors that we have to bear in mind, local factors such as what is going to be government policy, who's going to be in Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet. So I hate to be parochial and take it back home, but I know that's one of the questions occupying a lot of local investors. And in fact, we had a question a little bit earlier today. So before we maybe talk about some of the other shares that had interesting moves on the JSE today, the question really was, if President Ramaphosa chooses a good cabinet and foreigners come back into South African market, notwithstanding the risk of sentiment now prevailing, which shares could recover first, ShopRite, Bidvest, or Motus?
So my order would be Bidvest, ShopRite, then Motus. Motus certainly has the most upside because on a demand basis, they'll benefit more. However, I think President Ramaphosa has to deliver a much smaller cabinet and have a definitive plan for Eskom. Those are the two things that he has to do before foreigners will start looking at us again.
And if he doesn't deliver a good streamlined cabinet with lots of sharp and people of great integrity, then what?
I think it all comes down to how much is already priced into our markets. Our market has been under pressure, enormous pressure, for five years plus now, and a lot of our companies are very, very cheap compared to international counterparts. So, you know, if he doesn't deliver the cabinet everyone's hoping for, how much more are we going to see in a currency slide as the knee-jerk reaction? How much more pressure are going to be on our local companies? It's difficult to say. Already, I think our market is very, very attractively priced. So, yeah, I think if you look at those three shares, I think what you're trying to do in this situation is go and buy quality that will last no matter what happens with the cabinet reshuffle. Like out of those three, I would say my preferred is probably something like Bidvest. But ShopRite is right there next to it. And you look at it from the point of view that, you know, no matter what happens, these are businesses that probably can weather the storm. But if you do get a positive resolution, it's going to take a long time to rebuild the structures, to rebuild business confidence in South Africa. A great cabinet is only the very first step in a very, very long process. Yeah.
And also, I would hazard to say, Motus, I think, would also be third on my list, because Motus is cars. You know, it's big ticket items, where you have to have a lot of confidence. You also have to have more money and more certainty of job prospects, and that's going to take probably the longest to come through.
You look at the vehicle sales figures over the last 5 years. You know, if you go back 5 years, vehicle sales figures have fallen almost by a quarter in South Africa in absolute numbers. I mean, in the last 5 years. I mean, it is significant. It's sure there can be a rebound. We've got much older cars rolling around on the roads. But as you say, it's a big purchase. And the fact that we have it almost becomes that abstract versus real debate. Just because we have a slightly better cabinet, does that put more money in everyone's pocket tomorrow not yet. Probably not in the next year. Probably not in the next 3 years.
Yeah. Just on related to Motus, we had Barloworld out with results. Ashraf, I spoke to you very briefly earlier for a business day story, but you said the results were pretty commendable, and the motor division, which is roughly half of the business, they've got the earth-moving equipment, industrial equipment business, revenue did fall, but they managed to hold operating profits steady.
Yeah, they
which
kept
seems
operating
incredible.
Profits flat on the motor trading side, which is basically your dealerships, and on Avis. And that's pretty commendable. So they were very aggressive on their cost management. And for that, you need to commend management, because they took aggressive action in terms of bringing those costs under control. My expectation was that operating profits on trading would actually fall, but the fact that it was flat, kudos to them.
Yeah. I mean, shares up 1.8%, though they were up. They closed off their highs today, but still a decent performance in a day in which the overall market fell 1%. Gary, what did you make of the figures and also this expansion potentially into Mongolia?
I wanted to ask Ashraf about that, because we were also looking and trying to understand the expansion to Mongolia, and we understand that you look at Mongolian GDP numbers the last 2 years, there's been a significant increase. Mongolia is now growing plus 5% for the last 2 years.
Yeah, we all Googled Mongolia economy, didn't we?
Yeah, but it's Mongolia, and I mean, Mongolia is enormous. It's the... You know, it's, I think it might be a very difficult place to do business. I'm not exactly sure. But at the same time, the CEO coming out and saying that this is, they have experience in dealing with emerging economies, saying that they're going to, you know, leverage some of their Russian operations as well to roll that out. But this is coming on the back of the sale of the Spanish assets as well. And is this the best deployment of capital, or would shareholders prefer a nice dividend at this stage? I'm not sure.
I would have taken the dividend. Mongolia, lots of mining activity going on there right now. But as you've said, it's not that great. Mongolian gold mines, and I know this because there's a private equity company that's invested there. The yield is 4 times the yield on an average South African gold mine. So that's why there is an attraction to go and do some mining. In a country like that. And, of course, rare earth metals.
But it's not just the mining. It's actually the getting of the minerals to the export markets, being sure. Russia and China. And so when I spoke to the CEO, Dominic Sewela, he was saying that, you know, it's a nation of 3 million people, I think. So very sparsely populated. But Barloworld does operate in Siberia, so it is used to harsh conditions. But you need the infrastructure. So they need better road and rail infrastructure, for which they'll need earth-moving equipment, the diggers, to create the road and the rail infrastructure. So it's not actually purely in the mining operations themselves, but it's in getting the commodities to exports. So I thought it sounded pretty convincing story.
It's a fascinating story, but I think it's a high-risk story as well.
Okay, so Barloworld, would that be on either of your watch lists at this point?
Yeah, it's definitely a buy for me under 120 Rand, but not at these levels.
Yeah, we've currently got a technical trade out on Barloworld, so we're actually long Barloworld at the moment. So we're very, very pleased to see it beating expectations today. But it's a short term trade. It's not one that we hold.
It's a technical trade.
It's a technical trade. We're not holding it in portfolios.
So what's your target for this technical trade?
I think the technical target's about 141, I think.
Okay. So those are the options available to you.
But it's not sitting in our local portfolios, our long only portfolios. So,
okay. Yeah. Just before the break, can I ask you about Pioneer Foods? So I'll get to questions after the break, but Pioneer also came out with results today. Seemed, if you take the market's reaction, a bit of a horror show. 18% drop in earnings, the revenue was up 12%, but the share is closing 11% weaker today. Why is the market so spooked, Ashraf?
Share price ran up on expectations, bearing in mind that they, despite decent volume growth, revenue growth was relatively disappointing. Really, they're price takers when it comes to selling, and they're price takers when it comes to buying the commodity. So their margins are always going to get squeezed in a tight environment. So it's no surprise to me that they're disappointed. But the market somehow had an expectation of better results than what we received.
Mm. Gary is smiling because...
What of the Nigerian sausage roll?
It's not often you read results, commentary, blah, 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 and then it goes on to about volume growth is good because of sausage rolls sold in Nigeria. I wouldn't have put those two together.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, it's a good top-line performance in a very, very difficult environment. As Ashraf says, the business model of all of these food producers is really tough, and you know, especially when you've got a consumer under pressure as they are. So I think their consumer price basket was growing at 6.6%, but you know, it's well above official inflation numbers, and that's at least their cost basket, and they're not managing to push those prices onto their consumers that are buying it, and unfortunately that's putting their headline earnings number under pressure, and it's not a sustainable situation.
Yeah, and which is also presumably why you saw Tiger Brands fall to the extent that it did today. Mm. So a general sell off there. We'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us, email us, or tweet us, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's see what's happening to U.S. markets at the moment. And as We have closed the day negative. U.S. markets are trading in the red. The S&P down 0.5%. The Nasdaq off 1.2%. The Dow Jones not doing too badly, comparatively speaking, down 0.2%. Across the Atlantic, you have the FTSE 100 pulling back 0.5% today, and the CAC and the DAX both getting it in the neck, down well over, well, around 1.5%. Still with me in studio are Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss and Ashraf Mohammed from Arqaam Capital. So no surprise to see the Nasdaq off to the extent it is, given the Huawei blacklisting and the impact it's had between the relationship with itself and Google. Would you expect selling to continue, I mean, on the U.S. markets, Ashraf?
I think it will continue. I think the U.S. markets have had a good run, and it's got to pull back. And I don't think their fundamentals supporting prices where they are at the moment. Over the past, I think, 3 years, you could say, earnings has been supported by share buybacks rather than by actual underlying earnings growth.
It's a bit of a toxic combination to have trade wars thrown into the mix. Yeah. Gary, are you feeling circumspect?
I think I'm a little bit more optimistic on the U.S. markets, to be honest. So, yeah, I agree with Ashraf's point that the S&P 500 especially has, I mean, it's been the one pocket of excellence around the globe in the last couple of years. It's been the one place that investors have invested in and seen a very, very good return. And part of that is because of the technological superiority of a lot of the companies that sit there. Yeah, I mean, we've chatted about it on the show before, but the likes of Google and Netflix and the ability to roll out their products internationally and almost, you know, suck those funds back to the U.S. is impressive. And for a lot of those companies, I think they do deserve their premium. Obviously, there are some of them at exaggerated levels, but the U.S. is still the economy that is the thought leader to an extent around the world. It's the innovation hub of the globe at the moment as well. So I think, you know, to discount the U.S. markets as too expensive when it's done so well, I still think the U.S. markets are a place that you buy on pullbacks.
Okay. Moving back to questions locally, would the panel discuss the possibilities of Clicks and MTN over the next few years?
So, as a house, we prefer Clicks to Dis-Chem just because of their strategy. We feel Dis-Chem doesn't really have a strategy except to try and open more big boxes, whereas Clicks have a very definitive strategy as to where they want to open, size of retail space, etc. So we believe that Clicks still has further upside in terms of expansion. MTN, I think, is ex-growth. So I think you're going to see earnings growth come under pressure over the next 5 years, and it will really come down to the size of dividend that they pay out.
I mean, so, but if you give where MTN shares are trading at the moment, the dividend yield's still fairly high. So does that tempt you in on the basis of...
It tempts me in on the basis of current dividend yield. But then with the expansion of 5G, what their strategy is going to be, that's going to be critical for MTN's expansion. Also, bearing in mind, are there going to be any other Iranian issues that start arising? Right now, they're not earning a dividend. Could they face sanctions, you know, in terms of purchasing equipment from or equipment with U.S. products in them, just in case they send it off to Iran?
I mean, is that also because you've got increasing bellicosity from Donald Trump with regards to Iran, and do you think MTN is, I mean, I guess we've already seen it caught up in the standoff between the two nations over sanctions, but is that likely to worsen?
I think it's going to be an issue around technology transfer, because indirectly the Iranians will be seen to be benefiting if MTN buys certain software or equipment. So that could start hurting them as well. Mm-hmm. Just a thought.
I think it also comes down to the pricing around MTN. So we put MTN out as a stock pick, I think, on the show, you know, sub 90 at that stage. Just saying that if you look at what's happening in Nigeria, you look at the potential for calamity in Iran, a lot of this is priced into the stock at the moment, and the upside of the stock, it doesn't seem to be discussed, you know, as it used to be. You know, if you go back 3-4 years ago, MTN is an underpenetrated market. So, you know, Some of the markets that they have a number one or number two position in terms of market share are markets that only have a 50% SIM penetration, you know, where South Africa has well over 100% SIM penetration. I take the point that, and I do agree with Ashraf, that in a way telcos are ex-growth because they're utilities, and the way that regulators are going to treat them, the way that data is becoming a human right, you can't bank. Yeah, but you can't bank without having a smartphone app. You basically can't function without data, and that becomes, you know, as that becomes more embedded in the way that our society operates, these are going to start to trade and behave more like utilities that are going to be lower PE stocks. They're not going to command the premiums that they have in the past, but at the same time, MTN does have a compelling case in some of the markets that it's operating in. The pendulum has almost swung, I think, the other way. So we went from very optimistic around MTN that it can do everything, that it's the case of buying into the growth in Africa and emerging markets, and this was the leading player to back that horse, to swinging the other way, which is, oh, we've seen what's happened in Nigeria and what could potentially happen in Iran. Let's just stay out of it altogether. And we've seen the re-rating in share price already, and I think it's gone a little bit too far. It's starting to swing back now. At 100, it's starting to look a little bit more fairly valued, but I still think that there's upside in MTN if you're looking at a 3 to 5 year view.
Okay. And what about Clicks? So that is Arqaam Capital's preferred pick over Dis-Chem. I have to say, personally, I feel like I go and spend more in Dis-Chem than I do in Clicks. Dis-Chem's got that effect on me, and we discuss it amongst my colleagues, and we all feel like Dis-Chem lures the runts out of our pockets. So I don't know if that's your feeling too, or if it's just the price at which it trades maybe is prohibitive.
I think they're both fairly expensive, but they're both very, very good quality businesses. So I mean, yeah, if I had to look at a I don't know if I would say we don't actually have a preferred because we don't hold either of them. Just on a valuation basis, they are very expensive for South African stocks because I think they've almost become a safe haven for South African fund managers, that this is the one place that you can go in a very low growth environment and still
see money made.
Still see some money made. And you know, I think with the Dis-Chem coming to market, it's breathed a little bit of life into that sector. They've got a very aggressive rollout plan on the store footprint. We understand that as much as Ashraf says, that it is just open the next big box. You know, the fundamental driver of these businesses, if you look at international trends, is the store footprint as well. You look at something like Walgreens Boots Alliance. This is the model of pharma retail and how you expand and how you make decent returns for shareholders. So I think both of them are good.
But you're not buying either.
But I don't own either, and a little bit pricey, and priced in a way that if these, especially in Dis-Chem, and that's why I probably would lean towards Clicks, if the aggressive rollout doesn't go to plan, I think you're going to see serious pain.
Yeah, okay. Moving away from the Clicks, two questions on Delta Property. Ashraf, I think hoping to get your insight on the property sector. So just, are these buyers at current levels, asked one viewer. The other says, now that Delprop has long-term contracts with the government, has Ashraf changed his mind about the company?
Yes. I changed my mind at 190, but obviously I wasn't on air back then. So I still think that there is further upside, and they will continue to sign more contracts. Results are out end of next week. So we'll definitely see what their weighted average lease expiry is, etc. Last year it was 1.4 years. It's definitely closer to 3 years, and therefore it should get a continued re-rating.
Okay.
And the other thing is it doesn't have an A and B share structure, which means it's not hindered by the continued payment that has to be made to A shareholders.
Okay. So Delta Property gets your vote. Right. We shall move on to StockPicks this evening.
Yeah.
So in keeping with your positivity towards U.S. markets, you're buying Lockheed Martin.
So Lockheed Martin's one of the world's biggest defense contractors, and it essentially has a long-term pipeline with the U.S. government that looks very, very attractive. Defense contractors also do trade at if you look in the earnings term, they trade at a discount to the overall market. So Lockheed Martin's trading between 13 and 14 times earnings, which I think is going to give it a little bit of stability. As we were discussing earlier, the market has potentially run up a little bit ahead of itself, and I think if you look at something like Lockheed Martin, this is U.S. Fortune 500 kind of company that is not particularly extended. At the same time, you look at the projected earnings growth around 14%. It's looking very, very attractive if you look at in terms of peg ratios as well.
Mm. And if you get war, not jaw, it's going to be great for Lockheed Martin.
Absolutely great. So if you look at it, about 30% of their revenue comes from the F-35 planes. Their direct competitor is Boeing with the F-15. And essentially those planes, while it makes up such a large chunk of revenue, that is starting to come down. But these planes are only a mere $80 million to buy, and they're really looking at reducing the cost as well. So I think it costs now $45,000 an hour to run, but by 2020, $25,000.
Ah,
so big efficiencies are coming.
Ashraf, what tempts you at the moment?
So AdaptIT tempts me. they're beneficiary of the EOH debacle, especially when it comes to corporates. So governments are not affected that much yet because of all the tender processes. But corporates, a lot of them saying, we don't want to be somewhere where it's tainted. A lot of them are opting to do contracts with AdaptIT. AdaptIT is also expanded into not only South Africa, but the rest of Africa, doing business with oil and gas companies. They purchased oil and gas IT service provider 5 years ago, and there's a fair bit of upside within that business. They're also big SAP distributors in Southern Africa. So very cheaply priced, and I see another 20% upside from there.
Okay, great. Gents, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, Ashraf Mohammed from Arkham Capital. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. We shall move on to stock picks this evening.
Okay.
So in keeping with your positivity towards U.S. markets, you're buying Lockheed Martin.
So Lockheed Martin's one of the world's biggest defense contractors, and it essentially has a long-term pipeline with the U.S. government that looks very, very attractive. Defense contractors also do trade at if you look in the earnings term, they trade at a discount to the overall market. So Lockheed Martin's trading between 13 and 14 times earnings, which I think is going to give it a little bit of stability. As we were discussing earlier, the market has potentially run up a little bit ahead of itself, and I think if you look at something like Lockheed Martin, this is U.S. Fortune 500 kind of company that is not particularly extended. At the same time, you look at the projected earnings growth around 14%. It's looking very, very attractive if you look at in terms of peg ratios as well.
Mm. And if you get war, not jaw, it's going to be great for Lockheed Martin.
Absolutely great. So if you look at it, about 30% of their revenue comes from the F-35 planes. Their direct competitor is Boeing with the F-15. And essentially those planes, while it makes up such a large chunk of revenue, that is starting to come down. But these planes are only a mere $80 million to buy, and they're really looking at reducing the cost as well. So I think it costs now $45,000 an hour to run, but by 2020, $25,000.
Ah,
so big efficiencies are coming.
Ashraf, what tempts you at the moment?
So AdaptIT tempts me. they're beneficiary of the EOH debacle, especially when it comes to corporates. So governments are not affected that much yet because of all the tender processes. But corporates, a lot of them saying, we don't want to be somewhere where it's tainted. A lot of them are opting to do contracts with AdaptIT. Adapt.IT has also expanded into not only South Africa, but the rest of Africa, doing business with oil and gas companies. They purchased an oil and gas IT service provider 5 years ago, and there's a fair bit of upside within that business. They're also big SAP distributors in Southern Africa. So very cheaply priced, and I see another 20% upside from there.
Okay, great. Gents, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Gary Boysen from Rand Swiss, Ashraf Mohammed from Arkham Capital. We'll be back tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.